Data glaciale 2023 07 06, giorno 242, ottavo mese preciso. Ciao, sono Andrea, astronauta dei ghiacci, e come al solito vi parlo dalla base Antartica Concordia, nel bel mezzo del plateau antartico. Il mio ospite di oggi sarà una persona interessante, è il nostro medico e ricercatore dell'ESA, della European Space Agency, Sascha Freigang. Questa puntata si svolgerà e verrà condotta da me in inglese. Vi chiedo già scusa fin d'ora per la qualità della lingua da me parlata, ma questo sarò in grado di esprimere non molto di più. E intanto, prima, se me lo permettete, come al solito, vi lascio un mio ricordo, un mio lontano ricordo da ragazzino, da persona che stava per diventare all'epoca appena maggiorenne. Sono nato nel 1968, l'anno di uscita di 2001 Odissea nello spazio, e l'anno dopo l'uomo giungerà per la prima volta sulla Luna. Nel 1981 vidi partire il primo volo dello Space Shuttle, e quando nel 1986 il Challenger esplose, lo ricordo bene. Ero a casa perché una delle ormai rare nevicate a Genova mi bloccò un paio di giorni, impedendomi di andare a scuola. E ricordo anche bene la sensazione che provai, che in qualche modo è quella che provo sempre quando mi trovo nei luoghi del Finisterre, ai confini della Terra, dove oltre c'è solo l'infinito del mare e del cielo, un profondo misto di tristezza e malinconico vuoto, ma anche di pace interiore. Quel giorno fu per me come se si fosse chiuso il libro di storia di un'epoca, come se mi fossi improvvisamente risvegliato da un sogno. E dato che nella mia vita i ricordi importanti sono stati a lungo accompagnati dalla musica, ricordo ancora cosa ascoltavo in quei giorni, i Rush, che scrissero Countdown proprio in seguito al lancio del primo shuttle del 1981, al quale assistettero e, ironia della sorte, dei quali comprai proprio qualche giorno prima Signals, l'album sul quale si trova questo pezzo. Erano anche i giorni della crisi degli euromissili e la paura di una guerra atomica tra i due blocchi che allora si dividevano il governo mondiale era ben viva, e nei TG i servizi erano tutti per la tragedia dello shuttle e sugli alti e bassi delle discussioni sul disarmo tra Unione Sovietica e Stati Uniti. In musica, in quel periodo di particolare tensione, molti inserirono pezzi e riferimenti al pericolo atomico. Ne sono un esempio due album dei Rush, che all'epoca comprai, Grace Under Pressure, che contiene Distant Early Warning, che cita l'omonimo sistema radar antimissile in servizio in quegli anni per rilevare un eventuale attacco nucleare, e Power Windows, altro album dove si trova Manhattan Project, un pezzo dedicato al lancio della prima bomba atomica sul Giappone, così come Russian all'interno dell'album The Dream of the Blue Turtles di Sting. Missili ed esplosioni atomiche, navi spaziali allora ipertecnologiche, simboli dell'epoca di speranza e insieme del terrore atomico nella quale sono nato e cresciuto e che all'epoca era ancora forte. Sono nato in un momento della storia dell'umanità dove ancora si proiettava la mente verso l'esplorazione dello spazio e davvero si credeva fosse l'ultima frontiera. Sono cresciuto guardando ogni episodio delle serie di Star Trek e Spazio 1999 e a lungo ho sognato di viaggiare nello spazio, forse come mille altri, per sfuggire alla realtà della mia vita di allora che tutto era tranne che felice. Ho vissuto anche il tramonto di quell'era. Oggi, dopo decenni, sto assistendo alla rinascita del sogno che l'uomo possa mettere nuovamente piede su un pianeta diverso dalla Terra, e curiosamente mi trovo a vivere in una base antartica che per tanti motivi assomiglia ad una base abitata sulla Luna o su Marte, ad essere parte di un gruppo di astronauti del ghiaccio che, date le particolari condizioni che qui sussistono, viene studiato dall'ESA proprio in vista della costruzione di basi su Luna e Marte e della permanenza su queste di un equipaggio umano. Qualche giorno fa abbiamo avuto una giornata stranamente luminosa per la nostra condizione invernale, con una luce che per un paio d'ore ci ha fatto pensare a quella che si troverebbe su Marte, di essere davvero su quel pianeta e sui suoi deserti di sabbia gelida, invece che sul nostro mare di ghiaccio. Per curiosità, allora sono andato a cercare quali sono le temperature su quel pianeta e con stupore ho scoperto che la temperatura media è di circa meno 63 gradi centigradi, più o meno la stessa che abbiamo qui a Concordia in questi giorni. Nella mia vita di tutti i giorni a casa, questi particolari, la temperatura, la pressione atmosferica estremamente bassa che abbiamo qui e che spesso ci fa boccheggiare il minimo sforzo che facciamo, non mi colperebbe più di tanto. Ma dove sto vivendo adesso, in questa sorta di base lunare alfa sulla Terra che è Concordia, non posso che notarle queste cose e fare parallelismi e volare di nuovo un po' con la fantasia. Non andrò mai nello spazio. Ma il destino mi ha reso parte di un gruppo di persone che in qualche modo contribuiscono alla rinascita di quella visione di spazio ultima frontiera che per tanta parte della mia vita è stato pure il mio sogno, nella speranza di un futuro finalmente di pace e prosperità per l'intera umanità. In qualche modo questo mio vivere qui oggi, in compagnia tra gli altri di un pregevole medico e scienziato della European Space Agency, è un cerchio della vita che si chiude, uno strano sogno ad occhi aperti che si svolge e si realizza e che ancora a volte stento a credere sia reale. And so here we are, Sasha. You are my new victim for today, for this episode of my podcast. And first of all, I have to apologize. Yes, don't watch me like this. I have to apologize. Oh, well, I want to precise that every episode of the podcast is a first take. There will be no elaboration after the recording and so on. So I apologize also for my English that is not so good. But anyway, that is. And okay, first of all, I have to apologize because when first I know that the ESA doctor will be a German inside me, I said, oof, that will be a tough year.
It's fair enough.
No, it's not fair because in the reality I have to say that you are really one of the most kind person, most great persons that I have known in my life. I will never have imagined that, and so that's it. I am very glad to know you, and I hope that after this great experience, we may say that we will remain friends, because I really will be glad about this.
Thank you, Andrea. I have to give that back. I also think that you are one of the kindest person I've met, and your English is totally fine. You speak a good English. Everybody can understand what you want to say, so no concern about this.
Okay, thank you. Anyway, to close this thing, I forgot that I always say that the people generally are shit, and then there are the person. The singles that okay, it's really different. So this is a lesson learned for me. Let's go over this. And Sasha, what were your dreams when you were a child?
Oh, that's a good question. A good one to begin. I think as a child I didn't have many dreams. When I was a child, I wanted to become a veterinarian to treat animals, and because I liked animals as a child. But otherwise, there were no big aspirations or dreams. You know, when you were asked in school, what do you want to be when you are grown up? I would draw some cats and some syringes and needles and would say, I want to be a veterinarian. But there's nothing more to it than that. It was my only dream as a child.
And now you are a neurosurgeon, so not a veterinarian, but a really competent doctor, so it's not so distant.
Well, I hope it's always the concern you have that you are not doing the best you can, but I hope that at least I'm treating the patients as best as I can. But you're right, in terms of the field, I didn't miss it by far. I kind of became somebody who's treating other
kind of animals.
kind of animals.
Because woo, we are animals too. So
fully agree. Yeah.
So that's it. And why you are here now?
That's a simple answer for me, because I was always fascinated by spaceflight, especially human space exploration. I think it's one of the most interesting frontiers we have. It really goes down.
Go ahead, Damien.
I'm back in the station.
Okay, welcome back.
No, it really goes down to the core of who we are. And I think if humans want to survive in the long term, we need to leave planet Earth. So I feel that resources spent on human space exploration are particularly well used. And I always wanted to contribute to that. And it's not so easy to find a way to make a meaningful contribution. But coming to Concordia and working for ESA is one of the ways in my mind where you can actually do meaningful research. And, you know, if you look into the moon, you can at least say, maybe we've done a small part to help people go further to the moon and beyond. And I think we are all doing that together, because we are all research subjects for 1 year, which is incredibly difficult at times, because it's a lot of things we measure. But we all contribute to this amazing thing. And that's the reason why I came here. I wanted to be part of this.
And about this, I say to you something that in this month I never said to you. It was one of my dreams too. When I was a little child, I had the knowledge of every plane in the world, from the right one to the latest ones. And I was especially fascinated by the military ones, because they are the most beautiful ones, the most performer, the best performer, and so on. But at the same time, I was grown watching all the Star Trek episodes and the 1999, I don't know, you know, Space 1999, the story of the lunar base that on the moon will go in the space.
I think I've heard of it, but
it was a very old series from United Kingdom that lasted 2 seasons. And the both were about the exploration of the space in the Pacific manner, not like Star Wars where you have combats and so on. And I don't know, when I growing, I maintained my passion for the planes, but not but about what they were built for. I think, like you, that the resources spent in the exploration of space are the well spent money. And I think that if we stop making marvelous things that are instruments of death, and use the money that we spare from this kind of research to go to the space, will be the real future for our species.
Well, 100% agree.
That's it. And so, and I know also that you have a passion for the flight.
Yes, we both share this aviation enthusiasm.
Yes, this is it. And it's one of the things that I really like of our friendship.
Oh, I hope to go further with this.
No. And let's see what happens when they pay us. When they pay us.
No, they will. Okay. Just to clarify, I think for the listeners, we have been talking about doing a private pilot license together, and I think that would be an amazing feat to, you know, fulfill this aviation enthusiasm we have.
Yes, because you know, we plan, we dream about going, me, Sasha, and Davide, and each one that is here that will come with us to, yes, to go to a flight school and take a private license and learning to fly. That's it.
That would be amazing.
Yeah, and would be one of the, my dreams realized in my life. We'll see. We'll see what happens. So you torture us with many, many, many experiments here in Concordia about the fact that we are in a particular situation, right?
Mm-hmm.
Tell us.
Yes, the reason why ESA is interested in conducting research at Concordia is that this is probably the best analog for long-term space missions. It's due to the fact that we are living for a long time isolated in a small crew of 12 to 13 people. Nobody can be rescued or leave the station for a period of 9 months, which is very long. So in terms of the psychological effects, it's very similar to spaceflight, where you can also not just turn around and go back. But we also have chronic hyperbaric hypoxia, because we're living at an altitude of 3,200 meters. And this is also very unique, to have 12 people living in these kind of conditions for this period, especially if you have healthy individuals and you can study the effects on the human body quite well. And this will have an impact on future space missions as well, because we know that the way ISS is operating, for example, it's a normal baric and a normal oxygen percentage in the atmosphere they have. But if you want to do regular EVAs, extravehicular activities, for example, on the moon base, you can't afford to have a normal oxygen and pressure, because you always have to adjust the pressure to the suit before you go out. So for example, I think I'm not completely aware of the protocol astronauts use, but I know that they pre-breathe pure oxygen before they can do EVAs outside of the station to get rid of the nitrogen. It's a little bit, you can imagine, like diving. You have to adjust the saturations of the gases in your blood. And so future moon bases may have reduced atmospheric pressure and reduced oxygen. And in order to know what we have to put in place for astronauts to live healthy, we can study that here, because it's a very good analog as well. And now that's getting a really long answer. Make it short so we can come back to the conversation. But we are running 8 projects this year. The DC-19 crew is involved in 8 biomedical projects, which are quite intense on us. And maybe we can have a conversation about the project itself. But it's mainly taking a lot of body fluids containing blood, urine, saliva. We're doing a lot of measurements of our performance. So we do exercise and measure vital signs. We do a lot of cognitive tests. We wear a lot of devices, sometimes for 36 hours continuously. So we really do a lot. And then Andrea is smiling because...
Yes, we know. Is that Arthur? No, well, from my point of view and what I feel is... okay, for me too, I mean, I am too old, 55 years old is being too old to go to the space, and that's it. But for me, help Sasha, apart from the kidding that we have every time or more often, it's a great thing to make in some extent my childhood dreams come true. That's it. So it's okay for me to be here and to help Sasha in his research. And I hope that the studies that that are conducted on me will help in future to have a station on the moon or a station on Mars or a station on whatever in our solar system. And okay, in the future, the next generation maybe will go in other solar systems and so on. I hope so.
That's no, I agree. I think it's the beauty of the research we are conducting, that if we see astronauts living in the moon base, or at least in the future in Gateway, which is planned as a station orbiting the moon, I will have the idea that what we have done here is contributing in a small amount to what they do there. Of course, research is always not about the big leaps. It's mainly about small steps. But this year here is for all of us a contribution. So I think you're really entitled to think that, to see astronauts walking on the moon and to think, I had a small part in it. I want to believe that.
Yes, me too. And staying here, in my opinion, is in some extent really like being on the moon, on that lunar base Alpha that the telefilms I watched in when I was young. So it's I will never ever imagined to be here in an experience like this in my life, but I am here, and sometimes I ask myself if it is reality or a dream.
I agree. I do the same, and it's really like a different planet sometimes, especially if you go out and you wrap your head in I don't know how many layers, at least three. It's like a little bit like a helmet, especially if you have the goggles in front of your eyes and you're walking in this really strange environment of just ice and snow, and it's dark and cold. I'm sometimes wondering why we don't have helmets like astronauts, because that would be much easier. They wouldn't fog up like the goggles. But it's really, I fully agree. It's like sometimes like another planet.
Yes, I was thinking about this just today when I was in the physics shelter that is more or less 600 meters from the base. And I was walking with those boots that we have, plop, 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 plop. And working outside is very difficult because we had gloves and gloves and gloves. Someone has three different gloves, one over the other. And we had what we call in Italy moffole, that I don't know the English term, but anyway, we are speaking to Italians. So
they will understand.
And working with this kind of gloves is really like having the same gloves that astronauts use, because if you have to do something that requires precision, is practically impossible. And I don't know if you feel the same sensation when you're outside, but for me it's like...
Yes, no, it's very difficult. With the gloves to do fine motoric work, it's really challenging.
Yeah.
But I think it affects you more than I am affected, because I do my work at room temperature inside, and you have to go outside a lot and do the technical maintenance, which is really, I can imagine, is really tough. To do that in minus 96 degrees wind chill.
Yes, sometimes yes. Last week me and Davide were on the American Tower to put an instrument that I think was an ESA project in part, Domex, I don't know,
mm-hmm.
That measures the reflection of the solar rays on the snow, on the ice in our case, because here it's not snow but ice, and we were at in the middle of the tower with Damien Thiel says 16, 17 knots. And we had to take over the gloves, and it was impossible. After 20 seconds, we were completely frozen, and we had to descend the tower and go in the shelter. So you're right. It's
an extreme environment, and now we are sitting inside in a very cozy room, but just 2 meters next to us, beyond the wall. It's probably one of the most extreme environments you have on this planet. That's a weird idea, which you sometimes forget when you're, like, I'm staying inside a lot, so I sometimes forget the extreme place we're at.
Yeah, and we, in some extent, we became used to this environment, and it's it's funny sometimes when we go outside and we are at minus 40, we come back and say,
it was warm. Yes. It wasn't cold today.
Not too cold today. Incredible.
Yeah. That's a very funny thing that happens. That the relations we have completely shift.
Yes. And I don't know. Maybe a subject of study for the astronauts also this, because I think that if they go to the moon in the end, they will be used to the environment, and sometimes today is not so bad to go outside.
That's true. There's some very funny videos of astronauts that returned back to Earth, and they are used to microgravity, so they, one of them is putting a pen just in front of him because he thinks it will stay where it is, but it actually falls down because it on Earth there's gravity.
Yeah. I think it's a the human being is very strange, adapts to everything. Ah, but what can I say, Sasha? What are your feelings when you are outside? I don't know how many times you go outside alone.
Well, actually, I thought that today, that I want, at least as long as there's night, I want to go out in the evening a little bit more, just to enjoy the night sky and the, you know, unique environment we are in, and I feel very privileged when I go outside, and especially if there's nothing much to do, like sometimes you have a task outside, so you just focus on this. But if you just go outside for the sake of enjoying the environment, if you can say that, I feel very privileged, because very few people have spent a winter at Concordia. If you do the math, it's probably around the number of people who went into space. It's around 12 people per year, and it's now the 19th mission. So it's very not a lot of people experienced winter here. So when I go outside, I feel that I'm a very lucky and privileged person to be able to see this remote place in pure darkness. It's incredible. I'm really, these are the moments that makes it worthwhile, I think.
Yes, for me it's the same. I am outside for my choice, because I am ICT, an ICT and informatics. So if I want, I may stay in the station, in the base all day long. But I want to go outside to help my coworkers, my companions. And because really this is the most strange environment I think you may find on the Earth. And as Sasha said, one of the most extreme places in the world. Probably the most extreme, considering that we are here for 13 months. And yes, going outside when there is the night, but also when we were in the eternal light, in the 24 hours of light, it's an experience that it's not possible to forget, because in the night you see the sky like no one other than us may see. And Milky Way is incredible. Here is incredible, and we may see in certain times the center of the galaxy. And if you are a sensible person, and I think that each one of us is a sensible person, thinking about the immensity of the universe and how small we are, it's inevitable. It's that, and maybe that will change our minds, I hope forever, just to remember that we have only this small piece of sand in the universe in which we may live, and we have to take care about this. For what I am, I will desire with all myself that the men sooner or later stop make wars, stop killing each other, and think about what we are. We are nothing, but we have to live in this place that is the only one that we have. And try to find another one in the space.
No. Oh, yeah.
And that's all, I think, when I go outside. Also in the summer, because I think that until now, and I don't know if you agree, I never have seen a day equal to the other. Each day is different from the preceding, and I know that the next one will be different from the one I am living. So
that's true. It's always special to go outside. It's always a little bit different. No, I fully agree, and it's truly mind-blowing, the idea you mentioned, how small we are. And it's actually a nice reference to the space exploration, that we are here able to see the Milky Way in such a quality that is probably, hard to find in other places on this planet. Well, I guess we are lucky to do space research, or space-related research, and are also able to see an amazing night sky. Yeah, that's a good combination.
Yeah. And so, our time is finished. We don't have too much. And thank you, Sasha. Thank you so much to have this conversation with me. And talking with you, have a conversation with you is always extremely interesting for me. So,
no, thank you for inviting me, Andrea. It's very kind and a true honor.
Okay. Bye, Sasha.
Bye, everybody.
Ringrazio ancora Sasha Freigang per aver accettato di partecipare a questa puntata del mio podcast. Lui è appunto il medico della European Space Agency ed è davvero una persona che non si risparmia mai. È uno di noi, partecipa con noi agli stessi esperimenti, a volte un po' faticosi va detto, ai quali ci sottopone, e quindi niente, davvero una grande persona. Bene. Dopo l'usuale chiusura troverete ancora un mio personale contributo a questa puntata. Se vorrete ascoltarlo, non potrà che farmi piacere. Questo è Astronauta dei Ghiacci e io sono Andrea Traverso dalla base Concordia, coordinate 75 gradi e 6 primi sud, 123 gradi e 20 primi est, e ci state ascoltando su UR Podcast, il podcast di Unij Radio, la voce dell'Università di Genova. Per scrivermi, fare domande, commenti o semplicemente lasciare un saluto, scrivete a radio@unij.it mettendo nell'oggetto Astronauta dei Ghiacci. Un caro saluto dalla base Concordia. Cool, my dear. So you are lost in this immensity. You've chosen to go along the road to Little Dumb Sea in the middle of the night, far, far away, to stay away from the rumors and the lights of the base and listen to the silence, launching your dreams to the sky, hoping they will latch, they will be a common one with the stars. Dreaming to be in the center of a red supergiant, proton within protons, neutron going around at the speed of light, a flash of electrons, or at the center of a dying blue star, seeing her exploding in a supernova, be launched, lightning of energy into the space around, above the galaxy, in the intergalactic gap where supposedly nothing exists, no matter, nothing. And, sailing in this absolute emptiness, watch the balls of the globular galaxies and the disks of the whirling ones, everything you see now fulfilling your eyes with conscience and knowledge, now really lost in space. It's cold now, in the middle of this desert of ice, and your senses are blurring toward your end. Are you really sure to give your life away under this cold cover of stars, just to admire them? You are really sure that your soul will then connect to the center of the galaxy that became now powder of stars before the decided hour of your time makes really any sense? And suddenly, you find yourself eyes open in the little room of yours, staying in bed, realizing you were dreaming a dream real than the reality, tasting the savor of your thoughts and the fear and hope at the same time that the dream will become sooner or later reality, that you will be, in the end, powder of stars, protons, electrons, neutrons, and any elemental particle going around, finally free matter in the freedom of the universe. Far away, the ship is taking me far away, far away from the memories of the people who care if I live or die. Starlight, I will be chasing a starlight until the end of my life. I don't know if it's worth it anymore. Hold you in my arms. I just wanted to hold.